Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season.
Welcome to Barbecue Nation with JT's After Hours. Conversation that took place after the broadcast ended.
It's Barclays for your gold, silver, collectibles, rare coins, and high-quality jewelry. That's Barclays in Oregon, 503-982-2033. 503-982-2033, Barclays, buysellpawn.com.
Hey, welcome back to After Hours here on Barbecue Nation, and we've still got Jim Akmuti with us, his new book, Smoke Lore. This is a book that I'm recommending to people. I haven't recommended a whole lot of cookbooks or history books or barbecue books. My listeners across the country know which ones I have. This one's going on my recommended list. It's really good. I think you can learn a lot about it and the history of barbecue. And it will probably put some of your thoughts together, if you know what I mean. You've kind of wondered if you've been out there on the grill, like maybe where this came from or this or how this happened or who came up with this idea. I think this will give you a great background and basis to be thinking about where the cooking originated, where it came from, and how it developed. So there you go. You said, Jim, that your grandpa was a big pit master in Northeast Georgia. Tell us about your granddad.
Well, it goes way back in my family. My great-grandfather, where my Jim comes from, James Robert Akmuti, was a pit master and Brunswick stewmaker in Bartow County, Georgia, which is northwest of Atlanta in northwest Georgia. And his son, my grandfather, Robert Akmuti, was also known for doing barbecues and for making Brunswick stew at community gatherings all through northwest Georgia. And he was actually written up once in the Saturday Evening Post. They did a big feature in 1954, July the 4th weekend, called Dixie's Most Disputed Dish. It was all about Southern barbecue. And they just happened to set that story at a gathering outside of Cartersville, Georgia, called the Harley Farmers Club, which my grandfather had been cooking for years. And so this article has a lot of him in it, and the lead picture you see is him standing over a pit, looking down into it, looking very, very serious and stern as he's cooking this food. And that magazine was a real heirloom collector's item in our family when I was growing up. And it made him kind of well known in that area for barbecue, and he got these invitations to cook barbecue, to go and cook barbecue in far off places. And he took one of them. He went up to Chicago not long after that article ran and cooked a barbecue and made Brunswick stew for 2,000 people. Took some of his buddies and a couple of cars loaded down with wash pots and all the different equipment they needed to do the barbecue. And it was funny when he got back the little paper there near where he lived, the Cartersville paper. Mm-hmm. They interviewed him. They interviewed him for a feature, and it was very tongue in cheek. It ran under the headline, "Rebels Cook Southern Q in Very Midst of Yankee Land."
Yeah, I was reading that last night, and I got a big chuckle out of that. So.
And it was also funny in that article, they called him a barbecue chef.
Yeah.
And I'm quite certain that my grandfather, Daddy Bob, we called him, I'm quite certain that nobody else but the Saturday Evening Post had ever called him a barbecue chef.
Yes, a barbecue chef. You know, it's interesting. Yeah, you've got a section in the book about sauces and that. And, of course, your neighbors there to the west, I guess it's kind of northwest, isn't it, Alabama?
Directly to the west,
and I guess I'm forgetting my geography at this point. My old age is setting in, but you know, you've got white sauces and you've got Kansas City sauces. I was thinking of, you know, Big Bob Gibson's down there, and then you've got, you know, vinegar based, mustard based, and all that. In your research, did that kind of come along with the different types of cooking, styles of cooking, or are those something that were maybe developed later after these types of cooking settled into certain areas? I don't know if I asked that question properly, but basically meaning, you know, was the vinegar-based sauce and basting and stuff in the Carolinas, was that indigenous just to there, or did that come from someplace else?
Well, vinegar came with the Europeans, and a lot of the seasonings came with the African slaves. The oldest, barbecue sauces, particularly basting sauces, were used all along. There, you can find records of them going back to the early 1700s. And what they usually used back then was pretty much a mop. It was a basting sauce. It was usually a cider vinegar with a bunch of other stuff in it for flavoring. And it was to keep the meat moisturized as it was cooking.
Sure.
Some people say it was also to hide the fact that some of the meat wasn't as good as it should have been. But, you know, there are barbecue sauce recipes that appear in any number of cookbooks in the 1820s. There is a pig basting sauce in Mary Randolph's Virginia Housewife of 1824. There is a good barbecue sauce in a cookbook in Georgia in 1868, Mrs. Hill's Practical Cooking, and it's got some mustard in it. So there was always sauce. To trace the history of specific sauces, some of them have sort of ethnic stories behind them. Some of them are just the inspiration of a person.
Mm-hmm.
That Alabama white sauce, which is kind of a mayonnaise, vinegary, peppery thing that's usually used to dip grilled chicken in, is very much the brainchild of Big Bob Gibson, who opened up a barbecue place in Decatur, Alabama in the 1920s. And, others like the mustard sauce that you associate with South Carolina and to some extent with Georgia, because we have it over here too. It's not just South Carolina. A lot of people that say that came from a pocket of German settlers over in central South Carolina. I'm not as sure about that, but somehow or other the mustard got here, and mustard was definitely something that was known. It was very popular in Germany and in France. It was a European thing, so you can assume that they brought it here. The first barbecue thing I did about 25 years ago, I co-wrote a cookbook called The Ultimate Barbecue Sauce Cookbook.
Mm-hmm.
And I really researched a lot of the history of these sauces and talked to a lot of people then, and I didn't know about the proliferation of all these different barbecue sauces. I didn't know that there was this, tomatoless sauce associated with eastern North Carolina and parts of South Carolina, that there was this mustard sauce, that there was a thin red sauce associated with Lexington, that there was a black dipping sauce in Kentucky, a white sauce in Alabama, and kind of a machismo, we don't need no stinking sauce thing in Texas.
Yeah. That's true.
and of course Kansas City is interesting because they've been very identified now with this sweet, heavy red tomato sauce because of the great popularity of KC Masterpiece. But their sauces before KC Masterpiece were nothing like that. They tended to be more like that sort of weird, thinner sauce you find at Arthur Bryant's.
Oh, jeez. Well, the way I look at it, Jim, is this, and my listeners have heard me say this before, but I think most people I've had on the show will agree with this. To each his own. If you grew up with a mustard-based sauce and you like it, that's what you're comfortable with, that's good. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I like to experiment with all the sauces.
I do too. And people ask me all the time, what's your favorite barbecue sauce? And I never have an answer to that, because what the answer to it is, it depends on the meat and it depends on my mood.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, sometimes like, pulled pork. And pulled pork is, for most people, is a lot different than, picking a pig, so to speak. And you know, to me, it's not that hard to make pulled pork. I mean, you can make pulled pork in a crock pot if you're desperate, but, you know, you can do that. But some people don't like a lot of sauce on it. Some people like more just seasoning on it. Some people like a real heavy kind of Kansas City style, you know, sauce.
And some people don't like a heavy smoke flavor. I mean, I like a lot of smoke flavor. I like to know that it's been smoked. But there are definitely people who like a much more subtle smoke flavor. I've got friends who, if it's too smoky, it gives them heartburn. And I have noticed that there's a real hierarchy in smokiness. I would say that North Carolina pork and Deep South pork, the smokiness of it is really variable. Some places have a heavy smoke flavor. Some places have a much lighter hand with it. Whereas if you get to Kansas City, I think Kansas City is probably the smokiest barbecue there is.
Mm-hmm.
In Kansas City, they love a heavy smoke flavor. I've been to places in Kansas, and I love the barbecue in Kansas City, but I've been to places in Kansas City where I sort of thought, well, you know what, if somebody charred some bark and put some sauce on it, they'd eat it.
they probably would. They probably would.
Yep.
You know, you know, the one thing we mention this all the time on the show, but for the weekend warriors, not the guys that are gals that are competing, but just people that cook on their decks or backyards at home, the stuff you would eat if you were a judge at a barbecue competition is not the same stuff you're going to serve your family at home. It's way different. It's seasoned different. It's cooked a little different and all that. So, I always try to kind of separate competition from, you know, lifestyle and backyard, because they're two different things. They're both good, but I would defy anybody to sit down and eat a whole plate of ribs from a competition and not swell up like the Goodyear blimp. So
competition barbecue tends to be a little bit more, it's seasoned and smoked in a way to get your attention.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like somebody going on a stage and putting on a lot of makeup so they can catch the attention of the people in the back row.
Yep. And that's exactly it. Okay, Jim, one last question for you here, bud.
Sure.
What was your favorite thing about doing this book? Absolute favorite. Then you sit back at the end of the day, and there's a lot of great stuff in here. But something that makes, you know, Jim Ockmoody go, yeah, that was good. I like that.
Well, I mean, I was a journalist for almost 30 years at the Journal-Constitution in Atlanta, and other books I've written that, you know, some of them food-related, some of them not. The common thing is I love history. And to me, what I really loved about this book was being able to intertwine this food and these traditions and this taste that we all love and identify with as Americans with American history. It was being able to relate it to George Washington and Elvis Presley and Martin Luther King Jr. And my grandfather and all the other people who aren't famous. It was making, intertwining it with the story of this country was the most fun thing.
I bet it was. I really bet it was. Jim Ockmoody, Smoke Lore, Short History of Barbecue in America. I recommend this book, and we've made a new friend in Jim here, I think, at Barbecue Nation, and me personally, and I thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you so much, Jeff. This has been a lot of fun.
It's good. And we will have you back. Believe me, we will have you back. When we get something good, we hold on to it. That's my promise to you. We're going to get out of here, and we'll be back next week with another edition of After Hours. And again, we want to thank Jim Ockmoody. And don't forget, find that book, Smoke Lore, Short History of Barbecue in America. You won't regret it. Take care, everybody.